Beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. Greetings, brothers and sisters, around this fragile blue-green planet floating in the depths of space. Here we are, April the 27th, 2014. This is Ever Beyond, and that was my mobile phone. This is Ever Beyond, and you're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio, a listener-funded station. Please click the donate button or subscribe to the archives. That gives you something back as well as a donation. We are putting out 24/7, 48, that we are putting out information that is true and good and free from triggering information and disinformation. Having said that, if you can also check out everbeyondradio.com, there's a donate button there, and that's for my stuff. And you can also book some readings, personal readings from me. I need to renew my website. So if anybody want some personal readings, that's great. If you just want to send me some money, that's great as well. You know, dip into the PayPal. I've been doing this for free for 4 years now, and I'm really poor. You know, I can't afford anything. Anyway, enough of my sob story. Brothers and sisters, we have a really exciting guest for you today. I was introduced to him a few days ago, and we had a fantastic chat a couple of nights ago, and we're all ready to go. I got the bio from them, and I put them in my show notes for the page. I just have to find it. Where did I put that? Not that one. Oh, look, there's lots of people up there. Hello, everybody, on Ever Beyond. That's great. So, my guests are James Sheehan and Ilona Maria. And they're currently staying in Ireland in a beautiful farmyard, a bit like the place I'm staying from here. You know, we're all in our little off-the-grid homes. I'll let them describe for themselves how they met and all that good human interest stuff, and then we'll dive straight into Atlantis, because we all know the score. We all know where we're at. We all know about Atlantis. We all know that there were things that went on there, and so it'd be interesting to see. And if anybody's like reminded of these times when you hear my guest's voice, and we'll see what comes up. So, without any further ado, good afternoon, James, and good afternoon, Ilona.
Good evening over here, JP, and good evening or good afternoon, depending on what part of the world you're listening to all the lovely Ever Beyond people.
Yeah, good evening or morning, whatever. Delighted to be here with you again. And I see a few familiar, I was going to say faces, but names on the chat room. And other than that, I'll hand over to Ilona again to tell you what.
To help bring together your questions of who we are and what we're doing and all that fun stuff that people really don't want to know about.
good. Is it possible, Ilona, for you to either move the microphone closer to yourself and James, I'm getting a bit kind of, it's a bit like distant from the mic, and I'm hearing this more room echo and things.
Okay, we'll do our best. Are you getting echo now too?
That's better. Yeah, it's just that, you know, it's like being distant from the mic. So if you could close mic up a bit, that'll give us a better sound. That's brilliant. So, by the way, where'd you meet him?
Where did I meet him? Well, we met several years ago at a workshop. We're both hypnotherapists. We came together through that route, among other things, of course. My vocation was as a teacher. I was working in New Mexico, later in Colorado, and then now only recently came to Ireland this past summer to continue our work in a different vein. So what we do is basically what your lovely audience may understand simply as channeling, but we've been instructed by the council that we speak to. We just simply like to call them Pi. You can make a joke out of it, call it the pie in the sky, or use the lovely symbol Pi. But they're the powers of infinite intelligence who've made themselves known to us. And so they've basically paved the way for me to come to Ireland to do the work, to unearth a few interesting bits of information about Ireland being a key position for the once lost long ago in history, known as a place called as Atlantis. And so if I receive your questions piecemeal, I might be able to answer them for you a little bit better. Because otherwise I'll start rambling on. It's 11 o'clock over here, and my mind is already in some other zone. Usually I'd be curled up somewhere with my book. So,
all right, well, we're curled up with your book. So we're curled up with your book here. So you're providing the reading material, really. It's a fascinating thing. It's something that I've always been interested in, is regression. When I was a kid, my brother-in-law had this book, and I found it in his bookshelf, and I was just, I think I was about 12 or 13. It was called Explorations of a Hypnotist by Dr. Michael Rodney. And it fascinated me because he would do the regular regression so that people would give up smoking overcome the anxiety and things like that. And then he would take them further back before they were born and all that stuff. It just fascinated me that entire lives unfolded there that were very different but kind of slightly similar to the lives that they had. Mm-hmm. And although I didn't believe wholeheartedly reincarnation was a real thing, that was my exposure when I was, that young. And it's kind of informed my thinking, and until when I was about 20, I started observing this thing that I called asymmetry in relationship, and I eventually discovered that that's what they called karma. And so, with these two things, I left the Judeo-Christian world. It's like that's got nothing to do with anything, has it? Let's see if we can find something more true. So yeah, so the idea of reincarnation it comes naturally, really. So, with that idea, you've got to then assume that, okay, well, I therefore have been incarnating in and out, in and out, in and out, since the time dot.
Yes.
Tell us about what you've discovered. Your PII people call.
Like yourself, we both have come to this with a healthy dose of skepticism. I'm very much grounded in having to research everything ad nauseum, possibly on most accounts. But it was very difficult in the early days to understand what was unfolding. But when things began to change in and around my world in a very physical and real way, then I began to pay attention differently. And that happened in different segments in my life. My background, like you, is more of the family background is Judeo-Christian, although my grandmother always proudly stated that I should always consider myself an old Celt. We were born, my family comes from the Hallstatt region of Austria. I was born in Slovakia. We had to flee on the heels of the Prague Spring after my father was murdered, and I was bounced around the world after that. Because of those events, I was more, possibly more of a curious person, and also chameleon, having to really shift very quickly in the different cultures that I was exposed to. First having gone to Germany, then coming to America, moving to a very Afro-American community, then later on to New Mexico, working with Native American communities, the Mexican migrant communities. So the exposure was available to me, but as your audience knows, nothing is coincidental. And so through that, those geographical shifts, the person who I became rode on that wave and had many wonderful opportunities from both the physical teachers that presented themselves to me, as well as my innate desire to keep learning more. And later, once my hands got onto this wonderful tool called the Internet about almost 20 years ago now, I wanted to see how far did that rabbit hole go. And as so many in your, so many of your listeners, as well as you know, that everything begins with a very simple question, and then it splinters into the multi dimensions. And I found myself constantly chasing newer information that took me further in, and interestingly enough, that somehow interwove, where my past research in Celtic pagan lore began to very comfortably fit with the information that was coming from extraterrestrial life, for example. My research in linguistics with the Sumerians began to meld very comfortably with my own Hungarian language, my own language being able to speak Hungarian, and then later on comparing it to the Hopi out in Arizona, the Hopi language, and how many words have common roots there. So it just kept going. The layers just kept dropping off and more kept coming on. And I kept asking myself, where the heck am I going to get to the root of any answer? And so I began to research more the inner space. Although I was a regular meditator, but then I said, well, can I go a bit further? And that's how I came to the concepts of regression and other experiments around relaxation and getting deeper into the mind. Although that too, and here comes my rambling, a story when I was a small child with my grandmother in Italy at the age of 4, my grandmother was lost. I was about 4 or 5 years old. To make a long story short, I grabbed her hand. She was a panicked older woman. She didn't know where she was going. I grabbed her hand and pulled her into an alley and moved her crisscross through these streets that I've never been to in Venice. And I looked up at her trying to comfort her and told her, Grandma, don't you know where we are? The lady who used to be the wife of the man who made our shoes lived in this building. And I pointed to it. So I made a full circle, basically, with my own personal experiences, going back to, there's something to this. If children have these very profound experiences, I wonder if we could find some proof. And so we all, I think, who all of us who are listening and participating in this sort of life of searching for that elusive understanding of what we are all doing here, we do it in our own way. And so I'm kind of sitting on this foundation right now, very pleased with what is revealing itself with regression.
So the regression, did you always have, I mean, did you do the therapies? Were you a therapist, or did you get regressed and thought, wow, this is cool, I'll learn how to do that? What's the order in that?
On the side, I did the regressions. It took me many years before, believe it or not, I was regressed. I was looking at it from the outside in at first. And then when James and I bumped into each other some years ago, we began to explore that. And so that took me into the world that I'm in now, whereas I didn't know that I could attain the level that I'm attaining at this point through our the guidance of Pi and this collective that we're communicating with.
So, the guidance of Pi. Let's talk about Pi. When did you first connect with Pi, and was it accidental? Did you decide, right, I want to talk to the highest possible intelligence that I... Give me the president here. I mean, what was the sort of procedure? I mean, obviously, it may be something that you've already had connections with in past lives. And it was about... Well, what's the deal? I'll stop speculating.
So, I take over here, JP, if you don't mind.
Go ahead, James. It's lovely to hear you.
Yeah, thank you. To confuse the people even more with my love.
And speak closer, a little closer to the mic, because I want to get your sound really cool.
Of course, yeah. That's the trouble of being a sound technician. You have to get it right, of course, yeah. Anyway, so I was about to start with my journey, which is not as spectacular as alone is, because... I'm the sort of person that cheating wouldn't be the word, but I'd like to get, we'll say, the shortest journey to the point, whatever possible. So I done my research and whatever, but I always endeavoured to try and take the short corner, really put it, take it that way. So I suppose I was always on this journey because I have been on this journey many times before in many lives. But in this life, I was on a different journey until 1984 when I came down 16 feet after into the house and the end of the house fell on top of me. So that sort of changed my journey a small bit when it left me with 75% of my brain damaged.
What happened to a house? Sorry?
I was building a house. And it was up on the gable end of the house. I was up 16 feet. And I fell off. And the end of the house fell on top of me.
Oh, crap.
Yeah, just a small thing. I wouldn't say much noise. I just had 4 stitches in the back of my head. And I was in a coma for 3 days. This hour.
Well, that's normally a pretty important spiritual moment for a lot of people too. When you go out, I mean, it happened to me. I was out for 3 weeks. I had a bike crash in 86. But it's like some downtime. It's like I was talking with Rebecca today. You know, even today we still get taken out in that you get this really incredible wave of fatigue. You just got to go to sleep and have a spontaneous nap. And I imagine that you still get this, eh?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Well, I never get those things, JP. I don't even have what we call road to Damascus situations. I just had to glide into things. I don't ever have profound moments or anything like that. But anyway, going back to my accident, the accident was a bit of a mystery because we couldn't ascertain how it happened. It didn't make sense until I got into the past life regression world and I found out what had actually happened. And you better brace yourself for this one. There was a UFO coming for me. There was a Syrian UFO actually coming for me on the day to take me off for a spin without my permission, might I add. And they came too close to the house, knocked the gable on top of me and caused the accident. They were just driving a small bit too fast.
Clumsy old Syrians.
Yeah, they're dog rough.
So, is this Sirius A or Sirius B?
They weren't serious anyway, that's all I know. I don't know which one of them they were. But So later had to drive a couple of million miles, and could you imagine that? Like, they missed the landing spot by a couple of feet. You know, so it's very bad. So basically, they took me away for 4 days, that thing, to do their experiments on me and whatever they were doing, and have a bit of fun with me. But we'll get back to them at what they wanted me for. We'll get back to that at another juncture. But anyway, I'll move on my journey. So that's 30 years ago. And so I had a bit of time in my hands then, even though I was slow to what we call lie down. I'm one of these driven people that I just keep going no matter what happened. So when they gave me time to go experimenting with hypnosis and stuff, I could always do hypnosis, but I wanted to get qualified because from a genetics point of view, I'd like to have, as I know the dangers of it, it's like a child with a gun. It can be very, very dangerous in the wrong hands. So I embarked on a hypnosis journey to find out what was going on inside my head, because there was a lot of things going on inside my head that weren't too spiritual. My brain was moving around inside there and stuff, like loose inside my head for a while. And it used to make me dizzy and disorientated and a lot of other stuff like that. But anyway, life went on. I studied hypnosis and I studied various other healing modalities, and I studied how the human brain works. And but there was always an underlying theme in all my life that I wanted to help people, especially people with illnesses or people who are distressed or whatever. I seemed to always want to be and drawn towards helping them and healing them, or whatever word you like to put on it. So anytime I ever learned anything, it's sort of flash in my brain, this is going to help me to help people better. Like, this is going to be very useful when I learn this bit of hypnosis or I learn this bit of whatever. And then, again, I being the person that wanted to take the shortcut, I always wanted to do the fastest, most efficient way of doing things, so I kept learning different forms of hypnosis. And today I have something like 25 hypnosis qualifications, none of which I have any value in. I just have value in the tiny bits of information I got off them, but the bits of paper of no use whatsoever to me in my world. Bits of paper mean nothing. So I just kept experimenting with hypnosis and trying to do it without ever going, relaxing the person. Try to do it in what we call waking hypnosis. Like, the fastest I ever fixed someone's problem, I think, was something like 12 seconds. I hypnotized some person in and out and fixed the problem and gone. So that's the sort of experimenting I would have been doing in my younger days. And somewhere along the line, then I found out about past life regression, and that fascinated me because this was what I thought the missing piece of the jigsaw. So I set out on getting qualified in past life regression and done a couple of past life regressions. And after about the third attempt, I decided there was something wrong with this machine, like every other machine I ever had. So I decided I'd better dismantle it and get to the bottom of it. So I dismantled past life regression like I'd done with most other things. And I reassembled it over a couple of years. And in the process of reassembling it, Elona came into my life. And she had a load of spare parts from a machine she had. So we put all our parts together. And we came to a new horizon, a new dawn. Of these poi people, as we call them. And it wasn't something we were actually looking for, but we were looking for something different, definitely. We wanted to go beyond what we had learned, and we wanted to go. We wanted to prove anything or anything like this. We just wanted to. We knew there was something amiss, that we were missing something. So we decided we'd have to keep going, and today we're not happy either. You know, we're content, yes, but we're not happy that we've reached our destination or anything like that. We're possibly in the first rung of the ladder, that we have a long, 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 long road to go yet. And I suppose looking back then and stuff we've done in past lives, we actually done this stuff at a more technical level in Atlantis. But when we were in Atlantis, we were extra human, which would mean we were semi-aliens, so we weren't subject to getting old or anything like that, like the rest of the people. And we had, obviously, connections straight up to the sky. It was easy for us to get the information we needed. It was easy for us to dispense the information because we sent it out. We actually sent it out on the airwaves, so to speak, in the ether, rather than the airwaves like we use radio. We just sent it out into the ether, and we heal people in the ether by just sending it out. And it would travel from person to person and do the healing that way. And we'd be talking to dolphins and stuff like that when we were in Atlantis as well. We'd be using them for healing, having chats with them. But in those days, dolphins were more intelligent than they are now. Their actually intelligence has been geared back because they don't have to be as intelligent now in the world we live in at the moment. So that's basically our story of how we got to find these amazing Poi people. And we call them people, they're not people, obviously. They're energy beings in what we call the non-experiential dimensions. We're in experiential dimensions here on Earth, and that sort of stuff. I hope everyone understands what I mean by non-experiential. So that is roughly a synopsis of our long journey, and it was a long one. And there was lots of trials and errors and lots of mistakes and lots of major victories and lots of learning and lots of experience. And no regrets in the slightest about any of it.
Of course not. So, and there you are, and you're in a beautiful part of the world. I've been to County Clare, as I said. Ireland's a fantastic place. Lots of rain. Very green. Yes. Lots of rain. But I live in Scotland, and there's lots of rain here. And lots of wind.
Yes.
Oh, no. Well, not much motorcycle riding for you up there then, right?
Oh, holy moly. Well, you know, like I said, you know, I the last time I really regularly used the bike, it was in the mid-80s, and I crashed. I got back on the bike. I didn't want to have the whole, you know, I didn't go back on the bike thing. More or less, that was it. You know, I rode it around. I rebuilt it all. I rode it around for a few months, and I got a puncture in the rain. And I thought, screw this. Yeah, here I am. You know, I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, getting so soaked and waterlogged because I'm in a vehicle that doesn't have a roof. In London weather. Yeah.
That's terrible. How badly did you get injured at that?
Majorly. It was, I got, got physical, bones broken, lots of bones broken, my ribs and my right arm, but the ribs cut into my liver, and they sort of shredded my liver. That's why I got this handle Prometheus, you see, the whole liver thing.
Yes.
And, but I was out for 3 weeks. During the time that the Challenger blew up, you know, the space shuttle that exploded.
Yep.
That was when I was out, and so people, you know, it's one of those moments. You know, where were you when the Challenger? Oh, I wasn't there. Yeah, I was on some spaceship, probably. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
So, yeah. So having been through that kind of recreation experience, you know, we've all been through trauma. And as Tracy said, none of us have had a nice childhood.
But you need to tell, you know, in our years of experience, I'm including you in this, have you ever been anybody with a good childhood?
Well, exactly.
You know, I think we have an illusion of that. I think we should just be very satisfied that we are gaining tremendous experience. In one way or another, I mean, I, you know, aside from the traumatic childhoods, because that's a completely different conversation. But I look at my childhood and, you know, I'm satisfied enough to say, you know, it definitely wasn't, lovey-dovey, warm and cozy, lots of running and hiding and, meanish things in between, but boy, talk about experience. and getting a hold of yourself, pulling up your britches, you know, and kind of having a different world view. So I feel very fortunate to have come this far, and still have I believe I have a damn good attitude about life.
That's part. I mean, we speak to a lot of people on these shows who have overcome, and this is what it's all about. The
yep.
If you look at the ancient Tibetan teachings, one of the things that they say, we go for refuge to the Buddhas who have overcome, which means that they've mastered something.
Yes.
And if you've mastered something, that makes you a master. It doesn't matter if you're male or female. You've mastered something. And mainly, the idea is to master yourself, which can be quite a wild creature. You know, we have all these desires and, you know, I want to go and ride at 100 miles an hour on this two-wheel death trap.
Right.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah, fine. Go on. Go ahead. See where that takes you, you know.
Exactly. And my gosh, I'm not the person that is happy all the time, but when I have my dark horse come in, I ride it hard and fast and get over it and keep moving. And so, you know, there are certain things that I have learned through personal experience and also through observation, how to conduct myself to move up in a positive direction, to gain this, to gain these lessons as experiences, rather than become bitter as a person, to become better from it somehow.
Yep. Yeah, that's the way. So, having established where we come from, how we got here, let's go back all those years. Hang on. Let's see if I've got the right jingle. I might have a Let's Go Back jingle. Where's my Let's Go Back jingle? This is Wolf Spirit Radio. Not that. I'm sure I had a kind of... there it is, number four. Oh, right, there. No, that's not my fault. No, well, we can do we can go back in the TARDIS. Let's see if we can go back in the TARDIS. There we go. Okay, so here we are. We've arrived. And it's probably about 20,000 years ago or thereabouts. Do you want to take it from there?
Well, what would you like to know about it? Because I have a vast repertoire of 20,000 years ago. Obviously, that's when we assumed Atlantis went for a dive.
So, yeah, I'm interested actually in how Atlantis starts. Do you have much information about that? What was Atlantis?
Yeah. Okay, now where we start the new controversy, but that's what we're good at, and I preface all this by saying that this is not our area of expertise. We're healers, 100% healers. We don't go experimenting about Atlantis and stuff like that, really. That is just a coincidental thing that happens as we're doing our healing work. So I was given an analogy. We're like drift netters for salmon up in the Atlantic. We're fishing for salmon, but while you're salmon fishing, you'll pick up maybe one or two boxes of mackerel in the salmon net, which doesn't make sense, but that happens. So our Atlantean information is more like the box of herring coming in or the box of mackerel.
So it's a kind of byproduct of your work.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And we're happy to deal with your sloppy seconds here.
Yeah, so exactly. And you leave in seconds to fourth or fifth or sixth or seventh.
The remnants of the remnants of the remnants. Anyway, so go ahead.
So in our opinion, right, from what we've been taught or learned, this world we live in at the moment, we just call it the world, because we have no name for it, it's just the world we live in at the moment. This same world that we live in at the moment was actually Atlantis before Atlantis sank. It's exactly the same world, it doesn't change. So Atlantis, Lemuria, is the same world It's just under different names in different incarnations. So Atlantis was not a place, a mythical place. Atlantis was this place we're in now, this earth. It's not a mythical place or anything like that. It's just this earth in a different incarnation. Different islands, different continents, different, because it was flooded. The world keeps changing. The water keeps rising, the water keeps falling. So it keeps changing, but this is the same world. There's no such thing as saying Atlantis was a small island off Ireland that was off somewhere else. It wasn't. It was the island. The whole earth, the whole world, whatever you like to call it. And Lemuria was the one that was there before it. The name we had for this earth before Atlantis, and there was other names before that, and other names before that, and back infinitum. But we don't know the names of them, because this goes back billions of years at that stage, so there's no names.
And then, of course, we can neither prove nor disprove this information. This came to us from Pi, and some of it may not make any sense at all to the information that has come before, and some of it may slot in very nicely. We don't know. We're not claiming any of this to be the truth and the absolute truth. We are just seekers, and we'd like to continue the research and keep our door open to other seekers, and maybe some of this information will weave together very nicely with what has already been stated and what will be stated later on, and we can all learn possibly something from it.
So, where do we start? I mean, we've already had a little bit of a conversation about it, and one of the things that has kind of come along from the show earlier that we did, that I did with Katie, we were talking about that Egypt was a kind of Atlantis Mark II, having kind of recovered itself.
Yeah, okay. I thought that you saw our version of that, okay?
Okay.
We'll call it Source, God, Source, or whatever you call it. We'll say invented this whole world, or this whole existence, or whole universe. We don't know how many billions of years ago. But this world is just a tiny corner of it, obviously, but only a speck out of one end of it. Almost an insignificant speck in the bigger picture, but obviously in Source's eyes we are significant. So this world, we just say Atlantis was one of the incarnations of this world, and Lemuria was there before it. The world just goes through cycles. So Atlantis was, as they taught at that time, at the pinnacle of evolution. They had a lot of things, what we call here in Ireland, sust. I'm not sure if you understand the word sust, but did everything work out.
Can you spell it?
S-U-S-S-E-D.
Oh, sussed out, yeah.
Stout, yeah. So the Atlanteans sort of had things sussed out, right? But the Lemurians before them also had everything sussed out. And the existence before that also had it sussed out. So this information has been around forever, and it has been handed to all these different, we call them, incarnations of the world.
From our seed fathers that came outside of this terrestrial plane.
So it's the same information, it's the same knowledge. So it came to Atlantis, it was entrusted to Atlantis, Atlantis sank. So that information had to be left for this incarnation of the Earth, and it's there for us to find it. And we're finding it every day. We're releasing it out of crystals. We're releasing it from all sorts of different places, and we're learning it slowly. Maybe slower than we're supposed to learn it, but we're still learning it. We're finding, we're still learning or relearning, maybe, or remembering might be the more correct way of putting it. But it's still the same information. And we just come to it at different times, and the powers that be release it to us when we're ready for it. They won't release it to us when we're not ready. It's released slowly. like all of ourselves learning whatever we want to learn, we learn at a particular rate, and that rate is released to us as we're ready for it. We're not going to learn faster than we have permission to learn, or faster than we're ready. Our brain has to be ready for certain information. And to take that a step further, if one of us was taken forward, we'd say 200 years from now, we couldn't actually exist there, because our brain wouldn't be advanced enough to cope with what would be happening 200 years' time. We wouldn't have the things open in our brains, we wouldn't have the different energies in place, and there's lots of other stuff that we wouldn't have in place to cope with life in the future. You know, so like I can see myself in my own brain, I can feel stuff being released from time to time, getting new abilities, getting new capabilities. And I know of people that actually would have, they might lose 3 hours in the day while their abilities were being recalibrated for them. They'd just be sort of, they just wouldn't know where the 3 hours went, or 4 hours, or half a day. And not that they were being drunk or anything, these would be people that would be very corpus mentis. And, you know, and this is the way the world is going to keep going. It's a continuum. This world that we live in is going to be like Atlantis as well. Eventually, it's going to get destructed and to be rebuilt again. And the information that we will leave for the next generations, they'll be calling us whatever we are in a million years' time or whatever. So, to get back then to the Egyptians and all that, I suppose myself and Ilona have a slight insight into the Egyptians, because when Atlantis went down, we call it. And there's a bit of a tricky area I have to explain here later, but I'll just go ahead for now. When Ilona left Atlantis, she was taken off by spaceship, but she came back again to Egypt as an Egyptian, obviously. Well, maybe not an Egyptian, but she lived in Egypt anyway as an extra human. And while she was there, she actually set out the energy patterns for what we now know as the pyramids. So they were set out first day as energy patterns, and they were used as energy patterns before ever the stones were put there. So you're going way, way, way back before the pharaohs and all that. And so that knowledge was Atlantean knowledge, it was put in Egypt. But then I myself went to Australia from Atlantis with crystals that I hid under Ayers Rock, and they're still there. And they'll be staying there for long after I'm gone, because the world isn't ready for them. And all the other civilizations, like the Aztecs and all of them, are all Atlanteans, because they had to carry the information with them. And they had to spread it all over the world. And that's the way it's going to go again the next time, and so on and so forth. It just goes on and on, ad infinitum.
It's a lovely theater of expansion and contraction, of the sharing of knowledge, and just, you know, till the end, no one really knows.
So, and it's very much like you're saying, you know, like when the fishermen go out, they go out for catching salmon, but they have herrings, and so... In your gleanings, you've got various, and it's funny because you use the same word, nuggets. You know, you get these nuggets, and they're like, wow, you know, I never knew that. Isn't that a cool thing to know?
Yeah.
So, what do the PII, what do the Pi people say about themselves?
Okay, I'd have to go for a big long rigmarole of a description.
Have as much of a rigmarole as like. We'll take a break in 15 minutes or so.
I'll have it done by then.
Well, then it's not that long, is it? We've got plenty of time. Take your time.
Just the hour, I'd be more worried about. But, I presume we're all aware of dimensions, and I think it's fairly well accepted that there's 32 dimensions in the universe. And there's from 10 down are experiential, and from the 11th up are non-experiential. I think that's fairly well accepted, and to be, I reckon to be scientifically proved in EU at least, I suppose, or something like that, they're going to scientifically prove that these dimensions actually exist. So the non-experiential dimensions are, and there's way more of them, obviously, than the experiential, are occupied by what we can only refer to as the maintenance crew for the universe, the managers, maintenance crew, the whole lot, the people, the puppeteers behind the scenes that pull all the strings. And there's the amount of them that are there is just phenomenal. So they basically manage the universe from day to day. And to the entire universe we're talking about, not just this world that we live in. So the poi that we deal with are we call them the top managers in the non-experiential dimension, which might long ago have been described as archangels. In the Bible, there might have been archangels or stuff like that. So basically, the poi that we speak to are, they have different areas of responsibility. So there's censors there, and there's people in charge. I call them people because it's easier, because there is no name for them. They have no name on themselves, because they don't need names. They have energy names, which we can't get our heads around. So there's people in charge of, there's one person in charge of flora and fauna, so that's that person that has that job. We call him Francis. He's in charge of every collective there is to do with animals and to do with plants, and he's in charge of all his little maintenance crews that are looking after the animals and looking after the plants and all that sort of stuff. There's a person in charge of censorship for allowing information down to us when we're ready to take it, and so on and so forth. There's managers for all different departments. So we speak to a collective of 13 of these managers. So when we speak to them, we can get the information from all the beings we call below them in the management structure. So we can get the information all the way back down to the ground again. So if we want to talk to an animal, we can actually talk to an animal. Or if we want to talk to a human, we can talk to a human. Or if we want to get information about a human, we can get information about them. If we want to get information about a tree, we can get information about the tree. If we want to get information about someone's past life, we can get that. So there is no limit to the information we can get, as long as it is ethical, and as long as the being that we're getting it off doesn't veto the information. Occasionally the being might veto it. They wouldn't leave us get it for whatever reason, because it wouldn't be a prudent thing to do. So I suppose the easiest way for us to describe it is we have a celestial Google. Might be the easiest way of...
That's a lovely way of putting it, a celestial Google. Okay, so Pi is basically... and how many beings did you say there were?
We deal with 13 energy beings. These are on the 31st dimension.
So, and relative to our dimension, which is...
We're on third.
On the third, right. So there's a long way to go. And so basically they are up in the higher levels of the hierarchy, yeah? Is this what you'd call the Council of 13?
No, this is not the same. It could be. We don't know. We really can't dispute that, but we wouldn't consider them so. Again, they're constantly lecturing us about not getting caught up in hierarchies. They ask us to begin to expand beyond that. They're more of a sideways than a up and down. We do need to have certain things to help our minds define them. I've named them based on certain characteristics. So all these things that we've made them more humanoid are simply a way to manage them for our 3D minds. They're constantly guiding us to begin to see For example, if I look at the one character, if you ever watch the movie Citizen Kane, and where the protagonist is standing with mirrors on either side of him, that one being actually is a holograph and acts to deal with all those other aspects of the universe, he or she or it, the one who manages basically the flora and fauna, deals with the flora and fauna, all galaxies, all planets, but that information will not be given to me, because they only assist us with information that I could draw from. So my mind encyclopedia has been written through the years of my Earth experience, the schema with which I have come to this place, and they draw from those experiences. And I've always wondered if we ever sat somebody in the chair like the great Albert Einstein, and if he were able to be placed into a position of channeling, would he be able to download basically far more sophisticated information than I can? And that would be something that I would love to experiment with someday, to deal with somebody who is more technically inclined, perhaps has a more honed understanding of physics than I would. And if we could get this individual to be placed into this level of deeper relaxation or channeling again, would they be able to extrapolate information that that would really just blow our minds away?
Probably.
I
know I could reel off about three or four people who could do that with you. We have some very academic and spiritual beings in this circle here. It's very interesting.
Yeah, but there is one slight caveat to all of this, JP, and that is whether that person could hold the energy or not. There is a problem with holding energy. If you are channeling, we call it channeling. We don't channel, but we call it channeling just to make it easy. If you're channeling from a non-experiential dimension, if your body can't take that energy charge, they won't send it to you. They just won't send the energy. It's not going to be sent. So it's not as easy as just lining someone up and, you know, where you go. It's not as simple as that, I'll put it that way.
But I wish it could happen. I wish we could get more people to participate. Speaking for myself, I feel like I've been trained since I was a young person. Since my earliest days, I've had very strong visions. I've had very out-of-body experiences as a very, very young individual. I have memories that are crib memories. Just odd things, not only in my personal history, that, it's just not that interesting to discuss here and now, but just for the sake of what has occurred. It almost feels as if we've been on a training ground. And what they relate to us when they finally reveal themselves is we've been hoping to get the two of you together. We didn't think it would be completely possible in this lifetime. And now that this has occurred, we will ask you for your permission, because they work by the laws of free will, if you would embark on this journey with us. We will assist and guide you further. And away we went. We agreed. And so we feel privileged to do the work of helping others. I'd like to meet other individuals, your academics especially, to see how that information is how they're the information that they're gaining, how possibly we might be able to combine that. There's a wonderful a shamanic teacher out there named by the name of Michael Harner. One of the things that he's done is reach out to other shamans all over the world to begin to physically map out the different levels of the shamanic journeys, a true map, to see whether all these shamans are going to the same place, the same lakes, the same stones, the same terrain, using Tolkien's world as an analogy, Middle Earth. And they're actually working on that as a project. I'd like to see something like that come to light as well. I think we are embarking on a different horizon now. We no longer speak in terms of, is this possible? Am I mad? What is happening? We're all in agreement something is happening. We're all in agreement that it's quite wonderful. We can begin to see people who are very stable beings who are moving in a very simple in their simple life structure. There's nothing odd about them, and yet this information is coming through, and we are moving up. Or, again, not using the hierarchy, we're moving outwards. And I think we need to begin to collect this in a very different way for the next generation. Maybe I won't be the generation who does that. As I mentioned to you the other night, I feel like the one who came to hold the doors open for the ones who are coming in now. And the younger set that's coming in is blowing my mind. What they're able to do, what they're able to see, how they envision the world, how they express themselves in the world through art and creativity. So it's quite humbling to be a person in this time and doing this sort of work.
It is. You know, while you were talking, I was thinking, wouldn't it be cool if I could get. Make a special, like they have a summit, but actually do a kind of group remote view with some of the best, a lot of the show hosts on Ripple Spirit Arts are actually readers and channelers and all of this stuff, to get the whole lot together and to see the same situation, to remote view a situation. But with the different grades of understanding. And for instance, the host before this show was Katie Galanti, who is a doctor in physics. Yeah. Also Nancy Hopkins, who was an NSA intelligence analysis analyst, and has worked with telepathy. So she's with the logistics, the military mind, plus the telepathic mind. Yeah, and she's well into geometric forms and pyramid forms as well. So that's another thing. Have you guys gotten into the physical forms?
Well, what we're grappling with right now is the information that is coming to us specifically about Ireland and the energy crystals that are beneath Ireland and how the Om stones are actually being used as sort of like acupuncture points on the earth. And we're beginning to explore the bigger effects of Newgrange and trying to discover its different values in with regards to all those unusual things that they found with the pyramids in Egypt. But I'm not the mathematician, and so I definitely fail there. But I can appreciate the information by learning from others. Newgrange is very unusual in that it is older than the pyramids. And not much information has been studied here. And I'd like to see that happen.
So, yes, Celtic lands. I mean, okay, so there's, we're finding pyramids under the Ukraine. We're finding, we know that there's pyramids in China. I believe that in the British Isles, there is a pyramid that is what we know as Avebury Hills.
Yes.
In Ireland, are there any pyramid forms? Now, bear in mind, folks, that we're talking a very wet country. And where there's wet, there's wind and rain. And what happens is the grass and dirt builds up on everything. And so everything will get a coating of grass, which will deform it, will soften the form. But I was standing, you know, I saw it for myself. I was standing on the A303 looking at Avebury Hill, and I suddenly thought to myself, hang on a second, those are flat sides. That's a pyramid, for God's sake. So, Ireland, what's the deal? What's happening over there?
Well, I don't think we have any pyramids. Well, no, none that are overgrown anyway, but we have a lot of stuff that no one knows what they are. There's a big load of stuff on, and they can be tracked along ley lines and stuff. Yeah, a lot of them are actually on ley lines. There's one ley line coming through Meath that is 65 miles long, and there are things on it all the way along. There's different...
sacred sites and such that are beginning to be explored, and how unusually... And then the astronomical alignments that we see all over the world, and that's slowly coming to light here. There's just not enough interest, but yet it needs to happen. I hope it happens soon because of the age of these wonderful monuments.
So, welcome back to Ever Beyond. And we're talking with James Sheehan and Ilona Maria. Is that the one?
Yeah, you've got it.
Ah, what a delightfully exotic name you have. So...
Thank you.
So here we are. We're have you talking? Oh, you said, there were so many things you were talking about that I want to talk about. One of the things is names. You said something the other day about names, which is just absolutely fascinating. So do you want to kind of pepper it with a couple of examples, talk to the audience about what you discovered about names and soul names and things like that?
Oh, that was a very, very odd thing. It was very interesting to us of how, you know, this goes into the realms of what we don't completely understand, frequencies, basically when we are created in the very, very beginning, the spark of life, each one of us so uniquely. We are basically given an identification by source, by the creator, if you will, for lack of better words. And the name that we are given from the first moment of our existence seems to somehow resonate with us throughout time, and it becomes our mark. And that is how we are, how we recognize each other as a soul family, how we recognize one another through the groups and through different lifetimes, etc., etc. And so it kind of becomes our license plate. And somehow that frequency is imbued into every name, oddly enough, that is chosen for us here on the 3D. If you had, for example, a very, very broad example is if you were Jeremy in your last life and you're an Ilona in this life, somehow those names have the resonance, the tune of the very original name. So no matter how many times you've reincarnated, how many times you've changed your genders, your whole life situation in the new lives, that bit of you follows you throughout all your lifetimes. And that is how we somehow recognize one another and how our guides recognize us, etc.
That's very interesting, because like my moniker, JP, right? It's something that when somebody says it, it's like I prick up my ears. And it feels like, this feels like part, that's more my soul name than my given name.
Right.
So you're saying that my soul name somehow sounds like JP.
That's where we get lost in that understanding, because it's not a matter of the way we hear it. The way we hear it as human beings, but there is some sort of essence. There's an essential part of that frequency that is embedded in your name, in the name that has been, well, you kind of choose your name, you know, before you even come down here. We always think that it is the parents' role to choose it, but we somehow make that choice before we land here on Spaceship Earth.
You know, my son had this thing when he was born. Everybody's like, he was definitely going to be called Joseph no matter what, you know. And a psychic came up to my wife and she said, I don't know whether this is the right thing to say, but the name's Joseph, you know. And like it was almost like the default name for him to have. There are actually lots of Joseph parents all over the world. It's interesting that children do name themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just one of those things that we learn through time, with our experiments, and we were surprised. And it's one of those cuddly pieces of information, if you will. It's not this earth-shattering piece where how the walls of Gibraltar were created or how civilizations were born and died. But something as simple and humbling as who we are, how we are cradled in the stardust, how we are cherished through time.
Tell us about what it is when somebody says your name.
Pardon? Say that again, please.
What it is when somebody says your name, who pronounces it perfectly, what does that do? What connection is that?
You feel it. My name, for example, Ilona. It's been mispronounced so many times, but when it's vocalized by some people, and it doesn't have to be perfectly pronounced, it's almost as if there's if my body was an instrument, it almost feels like the right strings are plucked. You feel completely aligned. You feel in complete alignment with that individual, whoever they may be, and it's a lovely exchange.
I thought you'd say something like that. Thank you. Because
okay.
I mean, I feel exactly the same. And my name. We're back to the names. My name just has never quite fit. I've never quite felt comfortable. It doesn't quite fit. It's very rare that anybody ever says it right. So, I don't know. Maybe I'm just difficult. Meanwhile, let's go. let's take a thing and take a look at what you're working with. So, as
but,
far as
but, but let me interject here, because I am leaving out a bit of information that I'm keeping a little bit tucked away in my pocket. Long ago when I met James, I didn't meet him face to face. It was by seeing his name, by seeing James J. Sheehan. When I saw the name, it immediately reverberated in a very unusual way. I began to look, I began to do the Google bit to see, who is this individual? Why does this name mean anything to me? It's just a name. And it wasn't. It was more than. So names do have an effect. And that's happened to me personally more than one time. And it could be an ordinary name. It could be just a lovely name like Jeremy. But for some reason, that name, that combination of letters resonating from that individual has some sort of deeper value, deeper impact that we can't qualify. There's no solid explanation as to why these things happen, but it's just one of those odd things. And when they gave us the lesson of names, that clicked into place for me. And I began to see things very differently. After that, they also lectured us about words, how, and we've heard this from sages from long ago and present sages, how words have an incredible effect, that we must use them with great care. We've heard that over and over. But now I'm beginning to reflect on that even more so. And even in sacred texts, if you look at the Bible as a sacred text, even though it's been dissolved to very little now, much of the information has been pulled out, as so many of us know. But if you look at that, even after hundreds of translations, in the beginning was the Word. The Word. And the Word is a vibration, it's sound, and it corresponds with a color, and it corresponds with a frequency, and on and on and on and on. So there's much more that that we're learning now, and it's a very, very beautiful unfolding.
It is, thank you. I'm reminded also of the old Babylon 5 series. I don't know if you ever saw that, but he always used to say, words have meaning and names have power.
So, I've never watched it, but that's good, exactly, and that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, Babylon 5, if you ever get the chance to see it, anybody who's listening now or in the future, go and watch it. Download the whole series and spend a couple of weeks watching it all. It's a fountain of deep meaning and a whole series of great sci-fi.
Oh, fabulous. I'll take a peek at that now that you've mentioned it.
So, now, going back to... the building of pyramids, was that something that was... the who built them and why and how of the pyramid origin? Because we've just been exposed to Courtney Brown, the Farsight Institute, and it's actually Dick Allgaier who's going to be releasing his own copy of his tape. He was the guy who saw the pyramid and saw it. He said, "Oh, it's beautiful, and I see radiance of it and stuff like that." So. Ilona, this is a recent publication of a video that had guys who were remote viewing the building of the pyramids.
Okay.
And so whether they're true or not, they were very interesting. And his his experience, because basically when you're remote view, you kind of put yourself there, you know, the scene. You probably have an analogous experience to this.
So, right.
From your perspective, or from the information that has kind of accidentally found its way into your net, so to speak, do you have any answers to those three questions? The who, the how, the why?
The who. Again, it's... The who is... I'm limited by that. I'm limited by that information. I've asked them to help me track back beyond the Atlantean story. And they said, well, the individuals that have come to lay the groundwork come from places that we can't really help you define where that is. Your world doesn't have that information yet. And so I simply, you know, refer to these individuals, extraterrestrials, as seed fathers, our seed parents, who come from planets far and wide, who were co-creators in times that are not in our not in our understanding, in our current timeline, etc. But we all have an understanding that this was a very broad intelligence. We see too much information now. With the pyramids, you were asking, with Newgrange, they've discovered very recently that there were pyramidal shapes inside of Newgrange that have been removed. So these objects are around. We've been told that the pyramids were originally light pyramids. Later, they were filled in to be stone. That they somehow... acted in the management of lightening up the gravity on this planet so certain work could be done, which would effectively tell us that, well, okay, if the pull of gravity was less here on Earth at one point, it would help, help us possibly understand where these stories are coming from, not only of how these tremendous rocks in the deserts of Iraq have been brought together, and the giants that we hear of, and so many other anomalies of these large things being moved and moved in, not only in a particular space, but also from one area to hundreds of kilometers away from that area. That would make a little more sense. But these were generators of sorts. These were generators, not only generators of an energy, but also generators that recently we were told that created a, almost like a glass, like a bubble around the whole Earth. The gravitational pull was less. How much less? We don't know.
I'll tell you, I can give you a visual on this, because gravity is not what we've been told it is. Gravity is an opposite force. It's a wave that presses us down onto the planet. And so what the pyramid does is press up with Orgon. And it creates the field, yes, around the planet that is pushing back the gravity. Does that make sense? That would make much, you know, because, you know, you're talking about, I can see this whole thing as you're explaining it.
That's a bizarre thing. And yeah, I'm beginning to see the image that you've created. That definitely adds to my small level of understanding of it. But we see stones that have been carved inside the pyramids, and these stones are just phenomenal. We can't even begin to grapple with our minds how these things were brought together. Not only here, but in different other parts of the world, and so we've been given little bits and pieces of information, but we kind of let it flow, and then we let it go, because we don't know what to do with it. We don't know how to apply it. Again, to reiterate, we're healers. We want to assist. And we've been asked by Pi to assist in the awakening of other healers so that there is a domino effect, so that we can all kind of raise each other up to this place so we can do the greater work.
Well, I definitely feel that through Wolf Spirit Radio and our archives and eventually they're like the kind of tiny piece of dust that the saturated solution starts to build crystals around. Mm. The almost like the irritant in the grain of sand in the oyster.
Right.
That builds the pearl. So we've got our history. So the pyramid whole thing. I might play actually the interview with Dick Algeier later, or maybe tomorrow on my stream. Very interesting interview by Stephen Kelly from Revolution Radio a couple of weeks ago. So there is a building up now. So you're contributing to this, you see. We're building up a body of knowledge about what was really going on that is nothing to do with what Plato said that was translated from Greek to, you know, that this is a very much more direct experience, and more people are going to have memories. When they listen to this, they will hear, yeah, I remember that because I was there too. Wow, I didn't know that. You know, stuff like that.
So for you, JP, what would be your why? What would be the reason for these buildings, the building of the pyramids, the building of New Grange? What have you come to your conclusions about these things?
Well, one of our listeners, Tri Wolf, was saying he used the word lithopuncture, as in litho meaning a stone or a megalith or a pyramid or a pyramidion or a obelisk, used in the form of acupuncture. Now, there are more properties. I've been building pyramids for over 20 years now, in various forms, out of all kinds of materials. Wood, copper, pipe cleaner, you know, all sorts of things. But
wonderful.
One of the things that I know that it does is that because of the angle of the slope, it allows energy to slide up it. Mm. So it's a bit like how you'd imagine wind coming across the side of a hill. It will peak up and some of it will be deflected upwards. And these so basically what a pyramid does is it does that with energy, and it creates it draws in energy to it, and it then spouts it up the top, and then it fountains out and comes back up inside it like a fountain. And so it's a kind of like a torus, like you see the apple shape of the Earth magnetic field, and it's like a magnet. So, and only because of the specific angle, and the specific angle is the 51-51, and that slope angle that creates a phase relationship with energy. Energy likes to spiral and twist around if it can. So if it's going in a straight line, it finds something that'll twist it round, like the pyramid will. It'll then go with that, and it'll start drawing energy upwards, and it'll take it up into the atmosphere, so that it can then balance the charge between the atmosphere and the ground, and indeed form a protective shield, as that's what used to happen. There used to be a protective shield around the Earth through the pyramids being on, and they. Well, according to some, they've gone out because of the polarity of the universe, the polarity of the galaxy in relation to the Earth, or polarity of the Earth in relation to the galaxy, and they're now coming back on because the polarity is shifting.
That's it. And that brings us back to Ireland with your gentleman friend, and I'll have James explain the Ohm stones. And Newgrange being like a toroid. And we're not really sure, but we've been told that it has some very particular acoustic properties. And so we'll have James explain that a little bit more.
Well, I suppose I'll back up and listen on this about Newgrange and its significance in the world view rather than just this local scene. We have been told that the hill Tara, which is quite close to Newgrange, would have been the original administration center of Atlantis. So that that part of Ireland is very interesting to start with. And then we've also been told that Ireland is like the heart of the world. It's actually the heart of the world. It's not like it is the heart of the world, because the world is a living being all of its own, and it has hearts and lungs and chakras and all the lungs of the trees, and it has all the same components we have, only they're hard to identify. So Ireland would be the heart center of the world. And if you look at a broader picture of the ocean currents, they all more or less pass Ireland. If you look at all the arrows, there's sort of a system that they come quite close to the coast of Ireland. So basically Ireland pumps out the blood, which is the sea water. All water is classed as the blood of the earth body. So every bit of water in the world passes through Ireland at some stage. And the heart then being the emotional centre of the body, Ireland is sort of the emotional centre of the world. And that sort of accounts for the fact that an awful lot of people all over the world have a great affinity with Ireland, and they don't even know why. They just seem to think Ireland is a nice place or something, which it is obviously, but there's a different attraction. Because people from all corners of the world seem to be drawn towards Ireland. So then Newgrange would be part of this heart system. And Newgrange then would also pump out energy. There's a grid all over the world of like antenna that boosts the energy of the world. So Newgrange would pump out the energies to these antenna that are all over the world. And most of the sacred sites in the world are built on these spots where the antenna are. The antenna are actually invisible, they can't be seen, but they actually stick up. Rather than ley lines that are under the ground, these antennas stick up. So it would seem that Newgrange pumps energies to these antenna. And then, getting back to the Om stones, Om writing is generally believed that the Om writing is there to mark on the Om stones, the writing is there to mark graves and stuff. But we've been given a totally different line on it, that this writing has been interpreted incorrectly, that these are actually a farm grid reference points, a very sophisticated farm grid reference points for these Om stones, which comes back to the acupuncture points. So these stones were placed on specific points on the earth. They're mostly in the south of Ireland and the south of England, because that's where the crystals are underneath. The Atlantean crystals would still be under the landmass of Ireland and the south of England. So these Om stones were placed there as, like, we call them tuning forks, in a manner of, if we want to put it in some sort of a way we could vaguely understand it. So the resonance from the crystals would run between the Om stones and release into the atmosphere for the good of the whole world. But unfortunately, most of the Om stones are shifted, and they can't work, obviously, in their new locations. And which is a pity, in a manner of speaking, but luckily for us, the powers that be have found some other system to get around this problem. So the energy is still being released, but not as fast or as efficiently as it used to be released. And things like totem poles, then the Indians had and stuff, they were doing the same job. only again people didn't realize it, that these things were put on these specific spots to release energy. But unfortunately we're learning too late, and we have most of them shifted and damaged and whatever, but that's what comes from being too smart and not intelligent enough.
Bless your heart. It's all about heart. It's all about heart. So, have we answered any of the questions from the chat room? I'm just letting me check.
Yeah, sure.
I'm sorry, James. We miss you.
Yeah, I'm always being missed. I don't mind. But fire away with questions. I just vaguely saw a question there. Someone was on about trying to find out their angel name. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint people, and contrary to what you've been told, you'll never ever find out your angel name, because you won't be able to pronounce it, you won't be able to understand it. It's an energy pattern that's way, way beyond our comprehension. And if anyone tells you this, they can't give it to you, they're cutting you. They're selling you snake oil, and I can guarantee you that for nothing.
So, the question that came here is, and it's a very interesting question, because it kind of goes into stuff about the illusory nature of life. So, do they make a distinction between organic universe and inorganic universe, stroke the corrupt demiurge, or whatever terms you choose to use, as per se, a synthetic overlay over the organic energy stream? So, like that, there's it's like the stream has been hijacked in some way.
Could you explain that in English, please, if you don't mind?
Well, in terms of we all see our own reality through the filter of our belief system, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And that there is a real reality.
Yes.
You know, very much like the kind of real reality that you're living in your life and all of that stuff. And then there's a synthetic reality that is like the world that is supposedly out there, the luxury world of the bankers, and this is where you want to go, and all of that. And I think that's what we're talking about. But it's like that our perception has been hijacked, that we don't see the real reality, and something is being drawn away from us. Some energy is being drawn away from us because of that. I think that's what.
Yeah, that could be it. Yeah, but look, what is reality? There's no such thing as the real reality of the non-real reality, really, because you can't define what reality is. Like we perceive reality for a start 3 seconds after it's happening, and in that 3 seconds, it could have changed to a phenomenal amount. So. I know if you want to go for a simplistic version of reality, the reality is I'm speaking to you, and I assume you're in Scotland, but I'm the clue where you are. You could be somewhere, you could be in outer space for all I know. I have no guarantee that you're there, or that you're real, even for that matter. Like, what you call reality, you know, there is no real reality as such. I know the real reality is if you get hit in the road by a car and get hurt, that is reality, all right, I suppose. But other than that, like, does someone think like that the bankers and all of them have a good life? I don't think so. I know we live in illusion, as in we're constantly chasing our tails, and we travel the world to find our tail, you know, and then we find it at home afterwards when we come back. You know, but like, as for defining what reality is, I wouldn't even bother trying.
It could be our dream state, as the Aboriginal people speak of dream time. To them, that is reality, and the waking state is not. In Hindu, Maya, illusion, that there are onion layers of our reality, onion layers of our perceptions. So, and it can go on and on and on. We constantly move in and out of that spiral. I think the closest we come to reality is a few of us. I have not reached it yet myself, is that place of perfect stillness, that place of really being in the center of yourself and being completely still, that place that so many sages have spoken to us about in different eloquent books and languages, etc., through time and present time. We are always reaching, and so our reality changes with every microsecond of that reach.
So to answer your question, we can't answer your question.
In short.
Another interesting thing that actually about, like, you're talking about reality and stuff, thought, as in thinking, is the fastest thing there is, is faster than the speed of light. So, like, you can think so fast and reality so fast, you can all catch up with it.
And we're learning now how our thoughts really do impact matter. We're coming to a place in physics, in concepts of levitation. We're coming to places each and every day. Reality is unfolding in a brand new light, literally and figuratively.
Oh, yeah. Japanese scientists have measured photons at the site of a remote viewer target.
So you can't really put it in a box, because I grew up in the 70s and boxes were popular. Then in the 80s they said think outside of the box. But then at some point you begin to realize they lied to you. There were never any boxes in the first place. So it's a very even though we move in a collective of other human beings, we're still moving as individuals. And within that space of this skin bag that we're living in, there are so many layers when we act the different roles of person who goes to work, person who wakes up, person who has a hormonal moment, the mother, the father, the this, the that. So which reality? Is it the reality of the astrophysicist? Is it the reality of the person who comes home from the physics lab and has to deal with his or her children? You know, so there are just so many ways to mark that. And you can't answer any of these questions for another individual. We all are coming to our own understanding of reality, and the best part is they're all correct.
So in the last few minutes, we've got about 15 minutes left, are there any, presumably you're still in connection with your intelligence, with your pie?
Yeah.
I like pie. Oh, yeah. I miss pie. See, I've been trying to. I've given up meat, and I'm trying to give up wheat. And pie is part of. I had a pie. I confess, I had a Linda McCartney pie today. It's Sunday. It's my confessional.
Yeah.
I tell my secrets. I tell my family secrets. You know, on the show, this is what it's all about. Interestingly, also the show before us is called Out of the Box, as you were saying. Over the last few months and weeks, presumably you've been receiving new information that has kind of intrigued you, that has shocked you.
Yes.
Would you like to share some of this material with our friends?
Well, first of all, I won't get shocked, and I can assure you, because anyone that knows me would say I'm like what they call in the horse world, bomb-proof. So, no matter what happens, I won't get shocked. But I'll tell a nice story, I suppose, first, about something that happened with a client. I forget the name here, of course, but you may remember some time back, and as years back, there was a man found frozen in the ice. I think it was Otto or something was his name.
Otzi.
He was known as the Alpine Man. I don't know whether you can remember that or not, but he was found anywhere frozen. He was found totally intact, and he was frozen, but they found tattoos on his body, which were a bit of a puzzle. So, like, the nearest they could come to it, there were possibly acupuncture points, but there weren't enough of them there to be real acupuncture points, you know? But there was a lot of debate about it and whatever. But anyway, as the man said, would you Adam and Eve it in my cockney slang? Our client actually was that man in a past life. So our client was actually Utsi. So he was Utsi.
What was his story? How did he get frozen, like, in one piece?
We won't be bothering with that sort of stuff, no, that is only for housewives. We're not interested, we're more interested in the tattoos.
All right, but see, I'm always interested in the feeling, you know, how did you feel when that happened?
Yeah, you see, we like to get on with it, like, we get fed up with that sort of boring stuff, you know, with people dying and getting their heads cut off and all that, it gets boring after a while, you know? So basically, what we found out was these tattoos were actually put on his body to actually mark, not exactly acupuncture points, but every person has a unique part of their body that, when pressed by the doctor, will heal a particular ailment or whatever. Okay? Which is specific to every person. They're individual to every single person, these actual points. So, in that time, the doctor would, once he'd find the pints, he'd tattoo them so he'd know where they were the next time.
That is a bit harsh, really.
Yes, but that is the way they do it. You know, so, like, we find things like that interesting.
And it's not that we're, again, it's not that we're looking, it's just all of a sudden. The story, whatever happens, takes a left turn, and here we are. And it's not a question we ask. And there it is. So that was one of the oddments that came out.
But as for chatting information, we have that tool, but we're sworn to secrecy, unfortunately. And I say that with the height of respect. We have information that we're not allowed to divulge.
And it stinks because we want to, but they said, we'll give this to you, but not yet. You can't share this with your client, or you can't share it with anybody but we need to give it to you right now so you can begin to piece together the bigger puzzle that you are working on.
You can't look at the seeds while they're under the ground, can you? You have to wait for them to come up.
Yes, there you go.
Yeah, the other thing I would say to you there about when we're talking about reality and that, right, we are in the lucky position where we can have the overview of all what reality is and isn't. Because we have taken people to past lives, we've gone through past lives, we've gone to the death scene with them, gone after the death scene, taken them down the tunnel, taken them wherever the hell we were going with them. Like, I went on a soul journey with my own soul and a personal soul. The two of us took off one day in a flight of fantasy. And we took off. We were living somewhere in Holland, I think. And we eventually died, and we went off on our journey off up to, we call it heaven in one of the description. And we went back up to school in heaven, and we were giving our lessons up there, and we were learning, and we were... A lot of funny stuff went on up there where we were learning, and then we went and chose our next life, and we went through all the different decisions about the next life, and we got incarnated then, and we were born again. We actually came together, and we lived in Texas for a while, and we went through life in Texas. We died, and we went off again up for another spin up to see what it was like up there, and we came off down again to Sweden the next time. So, like, we have a very big overview of, let's say, what goes on. But, and not for one second going to try and explain it because it's so complicated. But we have a fairly good handle on what reality is and isn't from our work. And we just keep trying to work out this amazing tapestry, and it is a tapestry with threads going in all directions. You have just no idea how many directions the threads go in. And all I would say to people is, it is so complicated, there's no point in worrying about it or worrying about life. You just get on with it, live in the now, make the most of it, and everything will be just fine.
And that's the most important thing, to live in the present, to live in the now. And for me, I always feel at a loss, because I can't remember a darn thing that was said in when I'm put into my zone. I'll come out of that zone, and I won't have an idea, a clue of what's been stated until I hear it in a recording. So, but what I do get sometimes is very vivid images. The imagery can be so unbelievable. I definitely have a sense of not even being physically in my body at that point.
Can you talk a bit, if you can, about your experience? James has been saying that he's the grounding point.
Yes.
He connects to you. You're quantum entangled to each other. He kind of dangles you into the cosmic soup. And
yeah.
On the other side, they're reaching out to you as well.
Right.
What's your experience of that? Can you remember any of that? Do you know how do you do that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you what I do know. I call it my inner flight. One minute I'm here, I'm grounded. I'm in this space. And the next minute, I'm light. That's the only way I could explain it. It feels like many of your listeners may have had out of body experiences, and that's what it feels like. So I call it inner flight. I remember one experience where I was given a sense of who we are at that point of essence, and it's fluid. It's like liquid light, and as we pass through each other in this gorgeous place of space where nothing is defined, there is no up, no down, no nothing. We move through each other, we communicate through each other, and as we do so, it's almost as if there's a sound that goes along with it. There's a beautiful, not anything that I could describe here. It's not any musical instrument that I would be able to describe. So it's just light and space, liquid light, and a feeling. You asked about feelings, and it is, if there's ever a time that I could say that I've experienced the word freedom, and to me, freedom is being in a space of complete fearlessness, then that is where I go. And it's a place of no limits. And the limits that are placed on me by Pi are not in an authoritative way. It's more in a, I feel like I'm in the presence of beings that I could fully trust to guide me to the right door at the right time. So, I know you've heard this before too, but it is a place of unconditional love. And it's nothing that I could ever compare to when I'm fully in 3D, fully planted with gravity and with life pulling at me from all sides.
Sounds nice. Where can I get a ticket?
Yeah, come on along.
Come along.
But the nice part is that I mentioned to you, JP, is that I'm fortunate to not be depleted after the event. When we began to do this, we asked, what is this? Is this channeling? And they instructed us, well, we could express it in that way, but it's not channeling per se the way we may understand it, with a channeler doing it on their own, bringing in an energy into their biological space and holding that energy. What happens, to the best of our knowledge, is that James acts as a ground. He is the ground in this relationship of what it is that we do. And I somehow push up, push, again, using hierarchical terms, but I push up into the field where they are, where their energy is. And they remark to us that by doing this, I'm not depleted. My energy is not depleted. So when I can be in this state for 3, sometimes even over 3 hours, and it will seem to me as if only 20 minutes at most have passed. So there is a timelessness that occurs here. There's no discomfort when I come out of it, when I'm back firmly planted here. I feel like I've had a good rest and I could go on. When I've done other healing in my earlier days, either be it just general hands-on or Reiki or what have you, or shamanic healing, I've always felt like something was drained from me. And I didn't feel comfortable with that. I just, you know, I knew that, oh gosh, if I continue to do this, I felt like I was going to burn out. But with the way that we are doing it now, there is no burnout factor, which is, needless to say, is quite wonderful. Go ahead.
So, because we're running short of time, how do people get hold of you? How do we are you teaching this stuff? Are you sharing? Do you have DVDs, books, things?
We're not teaching it yet. We're new to this. We're new to how we want to progress with this. We're not necessarily new to what we're doing, but we're trying to undertake a road that does give the information out to people in a way that the right people, how should I say this? We were told by Pi that people would be sent to us. So we're not trying to make this into a business. We are trying to figure out a way. They also said, we understand your world has all these financial repercussions and you do need to, you know, I can't quit teaching and just do this full time and expect no energy return in the form of how to support myself. So we're working that out, but we are not trying to make our business of healing into a business of healing. People who do turn on to us in very odd ways. They come to us either by word of mouth. We can be found on Shona.com, ShonaHealing.com. And but as far as classes go, we can't yet teach what it is that we do. And the book is forthcoming. It's something that we are working on to share our experiences, because there will be one or two people that might be interested in what it is that we do. And so, but for now, ShonaHealing.com is the best way to get in touch with us.
Thank you so much. It's been great having you. I hope to have you back. If you would like to come back, that'd be great. We're out of time. Stay tuned for Healings and Meditations with Frank Jordan, everybody. Thank you very much, James Sheehan and Ilona Maria. God bless you.
Thank you.
Beyond.